Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Hey, everybody! The World Cup draw closes in, and Jonathan Johnson and James Benn join to discuss possible scenarios, the competitive margin between the favorites and everybody else, and of course, still breaking down the host nation and the social and political issues behind it. The World Cup draw preview and so much more around it begins right now. Hey, everybody, welcome to Que Golazo. Thank you so much for being with us. Que Golazo Pod on Twitter, youtube.com/ Que Golazo, and of course, CBS Sports and your CBS Sports app. Right then, the World Cup draw is upon us as almost, I say almost because we still have some playoff games, everything is almost set for the competition in November. And joining me, of course, CBS Sports' very own dynamic duo, James Bench. How are you, buddy?
I'm very well. I'm buzzing for this. I feel like this international break has flown by and brought us lots of drama, and like, it's probably not going to disappoint tomorrow.
Let's hope not. Jonathan Johnson, how is it? Do you feel the same?
Hey there, guys. Great to be on. Yeah, very much looking forward to this. I mean, I think it's always one of those moments that everyone looks forward to. When you start to get hyped up for a World Cup is just after you've had the draw. You know what some of the groups are going to look like. Obviously, we won't know all of them this time around, but, you know, still pretty psyched to be getting to tomorrow and actually getting some of these teams drawn together.
Absolutely. And make sure to follow both these fine gentlemen's content on CBS Sports, of course, regarding the preview to the World Cup and so much more. Before we begin and get into the nitty gritty of the teams and the pots and the draw, et cetera, we do have to obviously discuss pretty much the most important thing, right? We tape, as there have been obviously pre-draw meetings and events from FIFA in Qatar, Gianni Infantino, of course, speaking, and many others, you know, answering questions from journalists from all over the world. We can't take away, James Bench, the fact that there has been a massive controversy surrounding the fact that this World Cup is in Qatar. Where do you think we stand right now as we get the draw going? And I guess from now until November.
I suppose it's just our responsibility every time we kind of come to talk about the World Cup, which I have no doubt will be in footballing terms a fantastic tournament, just to remind ourselves how we got here. Obviously, in part, that is about talking about the corruption within FIFA back when the decision was made. But really, you know, we need to remind the world every time we talk about this World Cup that it has come at a huge cost. Estimates that I believe The Guardian had last year of 6,000 deaths building these stadiums, building these World Cups. We will never know. It is incredibly dispiriting and depressing seeing how many people have died kind of to a shrug from the Qatari authorities, who have of course have come out fighting that and will make claims, debatable claims, about how the World Cup has helped them move on and develop. But look, this World Cup, this event, which will doubtless be a spectacular footballing event, has come at a real cost, and we can never not talk about that. And we can kind of never allow it to just be sports washing the reputation of Qatar. And so we do have to always talk about it, and people get bored about hearing it on podcasts, but you're going to keep hearing it from me and from everyone else here.
Yeah, I agree with Benj that I think it's definitely not going to let us down in terms of the football action, but it is important to remind ourselves sort of every step of the way, you know, how this has come into being. I mean, I counter as well, you know, Benj is saying about how, you know, there was a lot of corruption rife within FIFA sort of years ago when the vote was made. It still seems that there's a lot of corruption, you know, rife within FIFA. I mean, you look at some of the comments that have come out in sort of the preamble meetings before the draw, you know, and there's been a lot of sort of disappointing, you know, stuff put out there. No fewer guilty than Infantino himself and some of the stuff that he said, you know, ahead of this draw. So, you know, while, you know, I expect that people will still be very vocal about, you know, potentially boycotting this tournament, wanting to see, you know, more examples set by the likes of Kylian Mbappe, who, it's my understanding, refused an invitation to be there for the draw, and obviously plays for Qatari-owned PSG as well. But, you know, I think it is important that we don't lose sight of, you know, everything that has been reported over the years, like Benj was saying, in the build-up to this tournament, and the costs in human terms, not, you know, necessarily in financial terms, you know, that has gone towards this.
Yeah, absolutely. And to both your points and James Bench, as you started this, as we celebrate the game, because literally that's why these fans and all of us included are so invested, because we love this game specifically from an international component, the historical connotations that the World Cup brings. This one, we have to continue discussing, obviously, the controversy that surrounds behind getting this done in the first place. Let's move on here, because we need to do set the scene, as the World Cup draw is on Friday, of course. First of all, it's good to have the three of us, I feel, when to discuss this particular topic. CBS Sports being a US-based platform, of course. CONCACAF has been a major top talking point. We have In Soccer We Trust, as Heath and Jimmy said goodbye to us and moved with Charlie Davis to better things, I guess, as the USMNT returns to the World Cup as well. But also, you know, Mexico and Canada, Mexico, with all the drama, they reached the same amount of points as Canada in qualifying as well. So that's 28 each. So it's Canada, Mexico, the USMNT, who came third, losing to Costa Rica, who have that playoff spot, by the way. So Jonathan Johnson, let's begin with you. Let's get a non-North American point of view on CONCACAF. How do you see about it? It's, you know, not just the USMNT, but the chances of the ones that have already qualified, Canada, Mexico, and the US.
Well, first of all, really excited to see Canada at a World Cup. I think they've got some brilliant players in the current squad. Really excited to see what Jonathan David can do at an international tournament, staying with Alphonso Davies as well. I think as well, sort of in terms of the bigger picture, I'm really keen to see how Canada, Mexico and the USMNT perform in Qatar, because it'll be an indicator of, as to, you know, who might be the strongest out of all of them, you know, when, of course, the World Cup is partially on home soil in 2026, when it's split between the three countries. So that's definitely something that's going to interest me. I did sort of find it a bit amusing, sort of, you know, the way that this qualification has been celebrated, you know, over in the States. Of course, it's a huge deal. It's great to have the US going back to a World Cup after missing out last time. I just felt it was done in sort of typical USMNT style, where it was left to be as dramatic as was possible, you know, and still going through despite the loss to Costa Rica. I know it would have taken a massive goal differential for Costa Rica to have usurped them, but still, you know, I think that at the beginning of qualification, the US probably would have been expecting themselves to be battling out with Mexico for the top spot, not losing out to Canada and Mexico and finishing third in the final of those automatic berths.
I suppose Greg Berhalter would contend that, you know, I mean, There's no reward for topping your group. And maybe we should argue that actually the teams that come through qualifying the best, especially in, you know, in the Ocho and in South America, should be rewarded in some way. But like, he got there, he got the job done, and pretty much it was done with a game to spare, which is always a good sign in qualifying. I'm super intrigued by what this US team can do, because there's a lot of young talent there that I still can't quite see it's fully blending into an 11. Like, I think you still have big question marks about your goalkeeper. You've got big question marks about your striker. But other than that, there's some really nice spots, and like, the talent is there. And obviously we're looking, as JJ was saying, we're looking at all of this partly with a view to 2026. But Mexico, like, I haven't followed a huge amount of their progress, but I like the look of a lot of their squad. Edson Alvarez has been excellent with Ajax. I think Raul Jimenez, game by game, is looking more like the Raul Jimenez we remember. I guess there's always that curse with Mexico that they do produce a lot of technically excellent inside forwards. And maybe, like, if you look at the squad, the defensive area looks a bit lacking. But like, they're good. They look like they're good to do what they always do and get to the second round and then lose. which is I think, eight times.
Yeah, that's right. Eight consecutive appearance. And I think that's something worth mentioning once again. It's something that I talked about. The thing about El Tri, and you have a very good point about the USMNT, both of you. I called it JJ, the celebration of the USMNT returning after losing to Costa Rica, like a wet fart. You know, it was, you know, kind of pleasing, you know, as it leaves your body, but you know, there was a sentiment of wetness. But, you know,
definitely the sort of thing that Jimmy Conrad enjoys.
But Benj, you bring a good point and something that I always think about, and it's not just the USMNT. I think about this about Mexico. I think about this about Canada. Or, you know, outside of that sort of intersectional competition that they have against each other, they really haven't been tested. Like, really. Like, I want to see them face, you know, European nations. You know, I want to see tough African nations. I want a Canada to face a Tunisia, for example, who only conceded two goals in qualifying, or a Switzerland, who they're not that sexy, but they're very stingy. Mexico is an interesting one because, you know, it's all about momentum for them. They need to reach their peak by the time November comes. And, you know, I don't even know if Tata Martino will want to stick around all this time until November. You make a good point against Raul Jimenez, but I think Chicharito not being in this squad is a mistake. You know, so there are many issues here. Having said all that, you know, it's exciting to see a Canadian side return for the first time in 36 years. Mexico and USMNT return. So, you know, it would be interesting. Let's move on. Jonathan Johnson, Interconfederation playoffs. Anything on this? Costa Rica against New Zealand, Australia, or United Arab Emirates against Peru, and they're all going to be in June, and I think Peru's game is going to be on my birthday, so that'll be fun. Yeah, exactly. You know, it's all pointing one way.
Yeah, I mean, you know, to be honest, I think if I'm looking at those games at this moment in time, I'm fearful for a few teams. Luckily for you, I'm not too fearful for Peru. I'm more thinking the likes of Australia, who I think have just been dreadful now for a long time. There's a lot of pressure building up, criticism of the federation, of Graham Arnold, who is the current Australian coach, and at this point in time, I mean, despite the fact that they go up against UAE before any potential matchup with Peru, you know, it looks like a long shot, you know, them getting through those two matches and booking their place in Qatar at this moment in time. You know, we're talking about, you know, one of probably the most dysfunctional teams that I've seen trying to qualify, and you know, I don't know that I would fancy them, you know, if they did manage to make it into the World Cup. So I think that's definitely a positive for Peru. And you know, obviously, we've spoken at length about the Wales, Scotland, Ukraine path from UEFA, which remains to be resolved. So it's really now a question of knowing what happens there if Ukraine are going to be able to play, and if they are, you know, who makes it through out of the three of them. But you know, for me, I think the one that's probably the most predictable at this moment in time is that potential matchup between Australia and Peru, because I'd expect Australia to get past UAE. And I'd also fancy Costa Rica just about over New Zealand as well.
Yeah.
The Koala Bears against Paddington Bear, isn't it? That's what I'm hyped for. It's very interesting. We've had this big conversation. Leonardo Bonucci has brought it up about how, you know, relatively tough every continent's qualification is. Bonucci was talking nonsense, saying UEFA's was particularly hard. But actually, if you kind of look at it, Asia has become a really tough place to get out of suddenly. 100%. Saudi Arabia, by virtue of, you know, pretty much importing aging stars into their league system, you can see that they have become a much better national team, and that their own players have improved dramatically. And so finishing third behind Saudi Arabia and Japan, that have always been good, that's like, it's not a shame. It's obviously, no, it's pretty clear when you
see group, yeah,
when you read the Australian press, that they did not see this coming, and it is a bit of a crisis for them. But and the squad does not look anything like, you know, the sort of 2010s, that sort of vintage of Cahill, you know, or even before then, Kuehl, Viduka, all those guys. This isn't a vintage Australia squad. But I think that's the one that could be really, really fun and really interesting, aside from UEFA. And with that, we still have to say, like, we're talking about June as if it will happen. We really do not know. That is now fast approaching. I don't know that Ukraine will be able to field a team or how that team will work. And certainly, you know, you could take that right the way down to Qatar if they make it. Like that, I think we almost just have to say, not a clue. But if it's Wales or Scotland that get through, two really good teams there that I think could get out of their groups.
Yeah, no, a really good point, specifically about Ukraine. This is, you know, things are way more important than this competition in terms of what's going on with them. But, you know, June will happen in a blink of an eye. And who's to say if they can even field a team, as you said. I think Asia is kind of a mirror of what's going on all over. I think the thin margin between, you know, the pot one favorites and everybody else is pretty thin. It's pretty competitive. We're going to get into that in a second. And Australia and Peru did face each other in Russia in 2018. It was the last game of the group stages. Peru won. Australia have suffered. But, you know, I was looking at that African qualifiers in Ghana, who were a mess leading up to Nigeria. And look where Ghana are now. So I don't want to take anything for granted in this one. All right. So let's take a break here. When we come back, James Benn, Jonathan Johnson, will discuss about the pots. Obviously, let's talk about the favorites, you know, a pot by pot format, or who are the teams to avoid, I guess. Maybe have some fun with some group of death. We can do some simulator games. I don't know. We'll get to it. But there is a lot of excitement regarding the favorites, of course, the pot two teams who are no slouches, and we'll see how that goes. Jonathan Johnson, James Benn, Jalen Mee, World Cup draw preview. We'll be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Did you know that while over 60% of Americans dream of starting their own business, less than 20% of them take the first step? The reason? Building a business is tough. Tailored Brands is simplifying the business journey. From launching and managing to growing your business, Tailored Brands isn't just another tool. It's your online business partner from launch to success. With Tailored Brands, building your dream business becomes an effortless experience. Their comprehensive platform guides you through every step, ensuring you have everything you need in one place. From LLC formation to bookkeeping, invoicing to acquiring licenses and permits, and even setting up your bank account, Tailored Brands handles it all seamlessly. And our listeners will receive 35% off Tailored Brands LLC formation plans using our link, taylorbrands.com/CBS Sports. That's TAILORBRANDS.com/CBS Sports. So start your business journey today with Tailored Brands.
Welcome back, everybody, to Kigo Lasso, James Bench, Jonathan Johnson, World Cup draw preview. All right, boys. James Bench, Jaime Macias was with us a few days ago. A great, great journalist, obviously doing a lot of content here in the U.S., MLS en Español. He has his own podcast, Football Infinito. He was part of the beIN Sports team, knows a lot, obviously, an encyclopedia, as Des Norris and I always call him, because he knows so much. But he did make a very good point about
these. I'm sure you say the same things about me behind my back.
Oh, all the time. Jaime Macias is the Ecuadorian James Bench. That's what I always say. But we have some very exciting pots here, obviously, and a lot of fun games to play ahead of the draw. And Jaime said, you know, the pots have never been more evenly matched. And I agree. I think, you know, the thin margins are crazy. Talk to me about the difference between the pot one favorites and everybody else, James.
Yeah, I would agree with that, although I have to confess I haven't thought about it at great length, but I just kind of quickly got them up. And the interesting thing is, until I think 2014 was the last World Cup where you had seeds and then everyone else was sort of split by region. Obviously, we will still sort of see those regional splits so that you can only have a maximum of two European countries, and then, you know, all the Asian countries, all the South American countries kept apart. So you kind of end up now with, in theory, that should kind of make it a little bit less likely that you get a group of death, because you have teams that are almost sort of tiered off. And yet, I think there's such a small margin between, say, a Mexico and right the way down to Cameroon. So the best team in pot two, according to FIFA rankings, is Mexico. The best team in pot four, Cameroon. Like, throw a blanket over those teams. I don't know which I'd rather face.
I think there's a chance for multiple groups of death. I think, you know, you keep doing the simulator and I just think, my God, it could be anywhere. Sorry, Bench, to interrupt, but like,
no,
it's really tough, especially Senegal, part three. Senegal are no joke. And they're in part three. Ecuador, I'm telling you right now, everybody watch out for them. And they're in part four. So, you know, I did a group of death, Bench, on HQ earlier, and I did and it was England, Germany, Senegal, Ecuador. That to me is tough.
Germany really, I think kind of if you go through pot by pot, you're definitely right that Germany, Senegal and Ecuador or Ghana.
Or Canada.
Yeah. I mean, obviously you can't have Senegal and Ghana. They are really fiddly. And I think for whatever reason, let's call a spade a spade. They may not lose all their games, but the whipping boys in pot one, the team that everyone will be begging to draw is seeded Qatar. So if you are England, you don't have, it won't be as easy as it would normally be because they'll be the hosts and all that will help.
Yeah.
But you would want Qatar. They are probably, and if you look at the FIFA rankings, I think they are the second lowest ranked of the teams currently there. Only Ghana are below them. And Ghana, it's just a bit weird. I think AFCON had a big impact on their rankings. So there is nothing. I mean, I don't know why specifically this tournament, but there's nothing but good teams in this draw.
I'd contend that people will be quite happy to draw. People in the pot 2, 3, and 4 will be quite happy to come up against a team like Portugal. And I've spoken at length already about how lucky I think Portugal are to be at the World Cup. They're even luckier to still be, one of the top seeds. You know, Portugal have the potential to make one of these a group of death, because you look at some of those teams in pot two and they're very, very formidable opponents. You know, Germany, when it comes to a big international tournament, yes, I know last time out when they were defending champions, they underwhelmed, but Germany at a World Cup, never underestimate them. We've spoken about the Swiss already. LME mentioned them. Croatia as well, when it comes to a big international tournament, usually turn it on. Denmark as well, you know, obviously the heroes of Euro 2020. There's so much quality in that second pot, and I'd argue that there are some candidates who, you know, can perhaps feel aggrieved that they weren't put in the top pot. I mean, we always knew with Qatar being hosts that there was going to be at least one nation that the majority of teams will fancy going up against in this World Cup, despite the fact that they're hosts. But then you look into that third pot as well, and there are some very, very tasty potential matchups there.
Yeah, so Desnoris, sorry, Bench, before you jump in, Desnoris, shut out the pot again, because let's play a fun game, Bench, here. Pick a team from each pot that you just don't want. Like, you just don't want them.
Don't want them from an England point of view?
Any from an England point of view. Can we just go straight to the final?
Well, I guess if you're a neutral, right? So let's say, for me, right, if I'm Peruvian and Peru hopefully makes it in, right, we'll be in pot four. So I can look ahead to pot one, pot two, pot three. I don't want Brazil, first of all. I know them. And they do very well outside of Europe in a World Cup situation. Chicha's last campaign in a World Cup. They've achieved the most record points in South America. I don't want England. They haven't lost a qualifier. They've got a depth of talent. I don't want France, but then Spain. And then I go to part two. And then I see the equally amount of tough games. The Netherlands, who knows what they'll do? And on the third one, I think that somebody like Serbia should not be underestimated. We've mentioned Senegal, of course, Japan. But Tunisia are very stingy from an international perspective. And then finally, Canada and Cameroon. So, Bench, give me some teams that you really don't want. If you're just if you're England, you can do that. Yeah, if you're, you know, England, who do you not want if you're England?
So I think kind of looking down in pot two, I'm immediately taken by two in particular of the European teams in Germany, just because I think there is a particular English neuroses that even Euro 2020 didn't banish, and Croatia alongside them. I know that they made it pretty hard for themselves, but Uruguay, particularly because then in pot three, I really don't want Serbia. If there's a way you can not get that team, that would be great. Serbia, Senegal, tough. Japan as well, I don't think. Then into pot four, I think the ones you mentioned, LME, Cameroon, Ecuador, Ghana. I'm going to flip this on my head as well and kind of do what the pot teams will think is their ideal draw. Mm. Not least, Des Norris, you can cut from here. Ideal draw for a pot one team absolutely involves the USA. They're the team I'd want to draw ahead of Mexico. Then give me Korea. I think I would say that they're all good teams there, but they're possibly the least good.
And reliant on specific individuals. That's always how I see it in the World Cup as well. I mean, South Korea are a very good team, but you take away some key players and you can maybe break them down. Keep going.
And then, I mean, I hate to say it, LME, but Peru or whoever whoever knocks them out will kind of be the team everyone wants.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's my dream draw if I'm England. Is England, USA, Korea, Peru.
England, Peru in the same group is going to kill me. It's going
to just to make you suffer.
Yeah, I know. Jonathan Johnson.
Yeah, for me, I mean, I guess I'm doing this from a French point of view. You know, there's a few teams to be wary of in pot two. I mean, especially given that France have started to look a bit flakier, you know, over the last few months. I mean, basically since they won the World Cup in 2018. And obviously we know all about, you know, that well-known phenomenon that is the defending champions of the World Cup struggling and often going out in the group stage. Now, for me, I mean, I think it would be pretty harsh on neutrals if France draw Croatia again, given that they're going to play each other twice in the summer in the UEFA Nations League. I don't think we need a repeat of that. I mean, Uruguay, you know, there's always a little bit of beef there. You know, we saw that at the 2018 World Cup as France made their way towards, you know, their ultimate triumph. I mean, I think if you're going to pick a team that's potentially favorable towards them, I'd go for a USMNT or a Mexico. I think France would fancy themselves against either one of those two. I think as well, when you're looking in pot three, Senegal could be very tasty. I don't think France would necessarily fancy that. I think perhaps an Iran, a Korea again, you know, a good shout. But Tunisia as well, you know, that would also be, you know, pretty intense. You know, Morocco as well. I mean, given you know, the makeup of France's population, that's three potential major rivalry games that could come into being. So I think I'd go for, if France wants an easy route to the, or an easier route to the latter stages, like looking at an Iran, you know, or a Korea. And then again, pot four, Cameroon, you know, another potential rival match. I'm wary of saying Saudi Arabia are potentially the team that you'd want to pick at this moment in time.
It could be annoying. So,
I mean, I guess I'd go for an Ecuador. I'm not going to do you the disservice, LME, of saying that the Peru would be the easy draw. I mean, I do hope that it's ultimately Peru getting into pot four, but for me, I think Canada definitely have wild card potential given you know, some of their quality elements.
And I don't want Cameroon France again. I'm telling you that right now.
Cameroon suddenly with a new coach as well. So for me, I think I'd pick an Ecuador there.
James Bench, by the way, Ecuador, they're the NBA's Memphis Grizzlies. They're the soccer version of Memphis Grizzlies. They are young. They don't give up about you, and they just keep going. On their day, they could be very, very scary. On their day, though, because they'd go the other way as well. Let's do this for a second. What's the mood around your teams? Obviously, both, you know, James, you're based in England, English, of course. What's the mood around England? It's usually pretty relaxed at this moment, is it not? Or how do you see it?
Yeah. It is pretty relaxed, and there's a degree of confidence that, you know, England tend to have, whatever the circumstances, this far out from a World Cup, because they are experts at qualifying. But this time, at least, that confidence feels earned. They are clearly on the right trajectory, and the past less than a year since the Euro 2020 final in 2021 has seen their players progress further. I think this is going to be a much better team even than the one that got to the final. You know, I think we've seen Saka, Foden all take leap. Saka, Foden, the centre backs, Jude Bellingham right now kind of looks like the answer in midfield, along with Declan Rice. This team looks really good. And I think the challenge for Southgate now is a little bit different. It's about keeping those expectations in check whilst also harnessing the belief and the delight and the optimism that this nation has provided. The other thing to mention very quickly is this whole Harry Maguire situation, booing him. It was only a few fans, but booing him at Wembley in their last game. You saw how Southgate really looked to stamp down on that quickly, and I'm sure he will do that with any other players that get grief, because the likes of Maguire, Pickford, they're not playing that well at club level at the moment, but they have continually delivered for England. And that's a good place to be in, that you can supplement that with a player like Aaron Ramsdale and let those two compete. You've got one player that is in great club form and another that you know delivers for England. So it's really good. And that is worrying me, LME. That is stressing me out.
Before I jump in on France, I've got two questions. I mean, I would phrase them as like million-dollar questions, but I guess they'll be like 500K each. One is this when football finally comes home for England? And two, when is it socially acceptable to start playing Football's Coming Home, like blaring it out over the airwaves?
Like, it's got to be mid-October, hasn't it? There's no such thing as too soon, though.
When the flags get broken out as well.
It's going to be after the summer. Like, whatever.
If you kind of sit down and say who might win the World Cup, I think you would do well to name more than four teams that you would put ahead of England. So,
ahead of England, okay. Who's that?
I think you maybe have a top four. Like, I'm just about to start writing out our power rankings and then we'll adjust them based on the group. But I think you have Brazil, France, then I would have England, I think, with Argentina. And there's a tier of four that I think should be disappointed if they don't reach the final, win the World Cup, or at the very least the semifinals. And then I think everyone else is a level below, even Spain, even an improving Germany, Belgium, all those. I think England are, for once, not due to some blind British optimism, genuinely, they belong in the top tier of favourites.
No, I think that's a very good... I think I go exactly what you just said. And Argentina, by the way, haven't lost a game in 31 matches, albeit they've played the majority of them against non-Europeans, so we have to see with that. But they don't rely on Messi anymore, and that makes it very, very scary. JJ, a good question. What say you? Well, first of all, when is it socially acceptable to play It's Coming Home, do you think?
For me, no, I agree with Benj. It's going to have to be, just sort of in the month, the build up to it. But, you know, given that we're going to have a World Cup that comes after the summer, who knows? Perhaps it's going to be a feel good summertime hit. Moving on to
before you move on, it's going to be. I think we're going to have a lot of remixes. That's what's going to happen in the summer.
When are they? When is it socially acceptable to play that song from 2018? Was it the Ramené Le Coupe?
That's your standard sort of like Friday night material, like go out for a few drinks with the lads, you know, someone will request that at the bar, like along with some Daft Punk. But it's funny though. I mean, on France, I mean, there was a sort of quite a fatalistic feeling after the embarrassment of the Euros, and sort of when you look at it or look back at it cold, obviously the capitulation against Switzerland, the way that it fell apart towards the end and forced them to go to penalties was disappointing, but no real shame to actually getting, eliminated by a very solid Swiss side. It was more the manner. But I think as well, that defeat has given France, this new hunger. I mean, obviously, they're not going to be world and European champions at the same time unless they defend their crown in the World Cup and get another shot at it later on. But it's, it now feels like this French side got the wake-up call they needed. Deschamps started to experiment with a lot of different systems, different players coming in. Jonathan Clauss coming in from Lens. I think that's a very good call, especially given that France seemed to now play with the right wing-back. And Kingsley Coman, as good as he was when he was experimented with in that position, I don't think he's going to cut it at an international tournament. So suddenly there's a feeling now around France that, we've gotten the worst of it out of our system. I think they will fancy themselves in the Nations League. You know, we already saw them have success in that recently. And now when you've got somebody like Benzema back in the fold as well, Giroud has come back in to replace him through injury, still doing the business. There's a lot of reasons, to be optimistic for France. And it feels like the question of ego has now slightly died down a little bit, because obviously that was something that threatened to derail them at the Euros when they finally brought Benzema back in after years in the cold.
Yeah, let's not forget, by the way, pertaining to England, France and all the big teams, that because this is in November, you won't have the psychological obstacle of players thinking, where am I going to play next or whatever? Who knows? You know, Kylian Mbappé.
Where am I going to go on holiday?
Yeah, exactly.
Although it could really... I'm fascinated by how it's going to affect the first few months of this season. Like, for me, the prime example, if Wales get to the World Cup, would you sign Gareth Bale? Yeah, my theory here is he is basically, and I don't mind, I don't think this is something we should judge him for, but he could just like, he might just not turn up really, like just train, just not really play games, not commit to challenges. So I kind of think, why sign him? He's not going to want to risk playing at the World Cup.
Yeah, well, just go.
Are there any golf tournaments he can play in sort of in the build-up so that he gets in enough training?
When's the Masters? That's in the spring, so he needs something else in the. Yeah, absolutely. My only point about Peru, by the way, obviously, aside from the fact that I hope that they make it, to make it for a consecutive fifth spot appearance, you know, and put themselves in this situation is amazing. We have no superstars. We don't have many players in Europe. None play in giant big clubs. So what Ricardo Gareca has done is amazing. And when he leaves, the inevitable exit of Gareca of Peru, there's going to be a lot of teams that should be interested. This is an incredible manager who's literally gotten gold out of stones. So, you know, the fact that we're in this situation in the first place, you know, fighting off Colombia, who are not at the World Cup, Chile and their golden generation, the last part, who are not at the World Cup, and only 2 points behind Ecuador in qualifiers is kind of an achievement. So that we'll see what happens there. All right. Well, that's it. Fantastic stuff from these two, Jonathan Johnson, John_LeGossip, and at James Bench. Let's have final thoughts before we say goodbye. You could go anywhere, perhaps. Who you think will win the World Cup? That could be an interesting. You don't have to do that one. But any final thoughts that perhaps we haven't mentioned? Jonathan Johnson.
No, just really looking forward to seeing what actually gets thrown up. And I guess I'm going to go for violence, you know, and push the madness button and hope that we get a really, really crazy group.
I love it.
I am going to, unlike cowardly Jonathan Johnson, I am going to stick my head above the parapet and say that I think Argentina are going to win the World Cup.
Wow.
Because it's messy and it's written in the stars.
For a winner, I'm going to back France.
There you go. Excellent. I love it.
And then I think that Zidane will come in with the goal of winning the Euros.
that would be fantastic. I'm going to go with Brazil winning the World Cup. I think they are due one. And Chiche's last World Cup, I feel they'll be up for it. Kind of like what James Bench is doing when he chose Duke to win March Madness, which is kind of looking very good these days, I feel, James Bench.
Sometimes you just click the button mark narrative and... I was checking our brackets the other day. I think I'm like top 10 or something.
I'm telling you, man. I think if you win, I think you might win the whole thing, James Bench. I'm telling you.
Final four, here I come.
Unbelievable. But anyway, so happy to have these two, Jonathan Johnson, James Bench. Follow all their content on CBS Sports. They'll also be obviously covering the entire draw and reacting to it, et cetera, et cetera. Jonathan Johnson actually wrote a great preview ahead of the draw as well. So make sure you check that out. And of course, domestic club competition returns this weekend. So we'll make sure to give you a lot of action next week and the Champions League as well. There's a lot going on. Of course, this game never stops. James Bench, thank you so much, my friend.
Thank you.
JJ, always appreciate you.
Cheers, guys. Always a pleasure.
Thank you, everybody. Qué Golazo Pod on Twitter, cbsports.com, your CBS Sports app, and of course, wherever you listen to your pods, and youtube.com/GetGolazo. Like and subscribe. Thank you so much. We'll see you next time.
The chilling new original docuseries on Paramount Plus.
Why did he kill his family? The answer lies across the ocean in a woman named Sylvie.
She's a can model.
Where desire leads to deception.
I ended up spending $12,000 and $15,000 a day.
It was addictive.
I can't get you out.
And obsession leads to murder.
Who did this to your family?
You can't really maintain a fantasy forever.
Control Alt Desire, now streaming on Paramount+.